Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hello, hello, friends, and welcome back to the Dream Bigger podcast. For those of you who are new here, I'm your host, Sif, and I am so happy that you've tuned in. I've had this podcast for like over a year now, and I still fangirl every time I get to speak to a founder whose brand I use regularly. Case in point is today's guest, Patricia Santos, the co-founder of Volition. So backstory here. I used the Volition Strawberry Sea Serum last year and fell in love with it. If you haven't heard of the serum, go to Sephora.com and read the reviews. People are obsessed with it, and it genuinely is an incredible product. I got curious about Volition when I heard about their product development process. Basically, they work with their community to crowdsource product ideas. Anyone can submit an idea, and if it gets picked, then it actually gets developed. They take the beauty for you, by you thing to the next level. It's such a cool and unique value proposition, and today I chat about the whole thing with Patricia. I'll let her tell you more about her background, but Patricia is a force. She comes from a VC background and has years of industry experience. You're going to learn a ton from her. I know I did. But before we get into our conversation, let's get into this week's hot tip, which just happens to be a product from Volition. I started using their Silt Gelée mask a couple of weeks back after this interview, and it has been absolutely phenomenal. The star ingredient here is black silt, which was actually something I had never heard of before. As it so happens, black silt cleanses and removes impurities from the skin surface. One of the other ingredients is plant-derived squalane, which is actually a natural compound we produce, which keeps the skin looking young. But as we get older, we produce less of it, which is why it's so important to supplement it into our routine. Think of it kind of like hyaluronic acid. The mask detoxes the skin and removes impurities, but it's also super nourishing. It's become a weekly ritual for me, and I could not recommend it more. And now let's give a warm welcome to Patricia Santos.
Know that I'm like, the strawberry sea serum you have is amazing.
Like, thank you.
Truly, I tried it last year, and it is really a great product.
Awesome. That's so nice to hear. I love it when people resonate with our products.
Yeah, and like, it's just like, as I was saying to Lexi, like, honestly, like, speaking to you guys was on my, like, it was like on like one of like my bucket list guests. So I'm so happy you're able to make it happen.
Oh, yay. How did you hear about Strawberry Sea? I just always have to ask.
How did I hear about, honestly, like, I am obsessed with browsing the newest beauty, like clean beauty, especially products. And like, I don't know if you know, but I'm like a wellness founder as well. So yeah. I'm just always, yeah. So I'm always really curious about like who's doing what in the beauty space, because I feel like the way beauty works is kind of like wellness sort of mirrors beauty, but we're just a few years behind. And so I'm always looking for disruptors in this space. And I'm a big nerd when it comes to like brands and ingredients and all of that. And I just like, I'd seen incredible reviews for your sea serum. And so, yeah, like I'm so happy I was able to try it. It's really a great product.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Totally hear you on the nerd part. I love products too. So I need to, yeah. Sometimes I need to pull back a little bit with how much I buy.
The Sephora sale, like,
that was dangerous.
I had to hide the bag from my husband. I was like, it's like stuffing it under my shirt. Like,
that's hilarious.
It's really funny. Okay, so I'm just going to dive right in. But yeah. I think, like, first and foremost, you and Brandy together have a combined 40 years of industry experience, which is just insane. So tell me about your... Yeah, well, you don't look it. Your skincare products clearly work. I mean, your skin is just fantastic.
Thanks.
So, what were you doing pre-Volition? What was your industry experience? How did you and Brandy meet? I want to know everything.
Yeah, where do I start? A bit more on the personal side. So, I'm originally from Manila. So, I'm Filipina. And my family immigrated to the United States when I was 12. So, I was in seventh grade. Not a really good time to immigrate, I would say. So we moved to Jersey City, New Jersey, which is where a few of my aunts were living, and they had really good Filipino food there. So I think that's what drove the decision. I got a scholarship to go to school at this Upper East Side private school in Manhattan. And then subsequently a scholarship to Harvard. And that was sort of,
I just love how you casually said that, by the way, just like casual, no big deal, but yes.
It's not casual. Anybody who went to Harvard will try and drop that they went to Harvard at any given point in time in any conversation, right?
Just like casual, like, you know, scholarship to Harvard. Like it's no, that's insane.
Yeah. So it's funny because when people ask me like, oh, where are you from? You know, Brandy has a really easy answer because she's, you know, born and raised St. Louis, Missouri. But, you know, just to shorten the story, I usually say New Jersey or I say Boston because I lived in Boston for quite a long time. But the truth is, I moved to the United States when I was 12.
I mean, I love that because, you know, I'm a POC founder, immigrant as well. So like, I love connecting with people who kind of have that story and that background. It's really cool.
I think it's so important, you know, because we don't maybe do it consciously, but I think, you know, the founders' backgrounds and, you know, culture and, you know, our stories influence the brand and the culture and our teams, probably in ways we don't necessarily, you know, think are obvious, but, you know, I do think that, you know, my moving here and being an immigrant, was really foundational in terms of not only, you know, my work ethic, but also, you know, how we approach the beauty space. It comes from an outsider perspective. It comes from a passion to do things differently. It comes from a passion to bring more POC and diverse voices and a multiplicity of perspectives into a space that honestly really needed it. But is making big strides. So I'm happy to see that. But I think it's definitely important that the founders are kind of open about where they come from and what their background is.
Yeah, absolutely. So you go to Harvard. What's next? What happens after that? Mm-hmm.
I go to Harvard. I decide that I love creative writing, and I think like I want to be an English and literature major. But I have a ton of student debt, so instead I go work for Morgan Stanley in investment banking. Help pay that off with a sign on bonus. And so I worked in investment banking at Morgan Stanley for a year in New York. And then I got the chance to move back to Asia and work in Morgan Stanley's Hong Kong office for a while. So it's funny, I jumped at that chance because for the longest time, you know, after immigrating here, I feel like I was trying to kind of fit in and become more American in a way. And I spent all of my energy doing that, like getting rid of my accent, you know, just trying to fit in. And then I think I kind of came into my own in my 20s, and I was like, you know what, I'm going home. I'm going to go going to go work in Asia and see what it's like to be on the business side of things there. So I moved to Hong Kong with Morgan Stanley, which was just such an amazing experience. You know, very, very intense. Investment banking is definitely an intense route. But yeah, it really helped me. Really helped me a lot, learn a lot about finance and business planning and strategy. And then I came back and worked at Ralph Lauren. I figured, you know what, I got tired of just pure finance. I wanted to maybe exercise a little bit of that creative love that I wanted to exercise with an English major. But yeah, I went to go work at Polo Ralph Lauren before business school.
So what were you doing there?
I was doing strategy. So Polo had just acquired, and they never acquire companies, but they had just acquired this Canadian company called Club Monaco. I don't know if you've ever shopped there. But,
yeah, I'm Canadian. So all the time.
So Club Monaco is awesome. And Polo bought them. This was back in early 2000s, and was basically working to expand them in the United States. And so I worked with the CEO, the new CEO that Polo had placed in that company. His name was John Mijas, and basically helped him write out the business plan for Club Monaco expansion in the United States. Which was awesome because it was like, it was like, I was doing more of like the finance, business plan, strategy stuff, but just working for an apparel company, I got to meet the buyers and the planners and be in the fit meetings and talk to the folks at the store. So it was just, it was really, really hands-on, just a really amazing learning experience for me.
Like a marrying of your two worlds, like the creative and the kind of strategy business side, which you were obviously great at.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's really cool. So then how did you end up meeting Brandy and kind of what led you into the world of beauty?
Yeah, sure. So after business school, I joined a venture capital firm. And I started looking, actually I joined the healthcare team when they started looking at consumer facing health. Like this was back in, 2000s. And they, what traditionally had been a team that looked at medical devices and diagnostics and stents and et cetera, was starting to look at just more wellness, more preventative health, as a lot of healthcare has gone. And one of the first companies that we invested in was Lululemon, also Canadian. We're loving the Canadian apparel retailer.
Clearly,
so.
Yeah.
And so that the success of that investment basically focused us very keenly on the consumer space. I was one of the only female investors, or actually, I was the only female investor in the entire group at the time. So I got a lot of the beauty and fashion brands who are raising money naturally. And really, I think my love of beauty started there. And it wasn't just love of beauty products because, I'm Asian and therefore a 12-step routine is just par for the course, right? And I love products and I definitely overspend at, the Sephora sale like you just did. But my love for beauty at that point in my life was really coming from the entrepreneurs. And there were so many amazing female entrepreneurs, particularly in the beauty space, that I didn't see in beverage, I didn't see in supplements, I didn't see in, even fashion, honestly. Mm-hmm. But particularly because we looked at very athletic apparel kind of fashion concepts because of the Lululemon investment. But yeah, beauty was where I found these role models and these inspirations of female entrepreneurs who were just breaking new ground with their brands and their products. And that's what kind of got me started down the road. I just wanted to learn more. I couldn't find out enough about you know, who's starting what company and who's looking at, you know, this particular category, who's taking on hair care versus body care. Like I just wanted to learn it all. And and that's really where I found my passion for beauty. So I decided after I left investing that I was going to go into the beauty space, and I joined a skincare company, and that's where I met Brandy. So I took over. I was a venture investor, and I had like a deep kind of finance background, but I realized that I hadn't actually held an operating role in a company before. I mean, strategy at Club Monaco was kind of very, you know, I wasn't deep enough into the operations of the company as I'd like. So I really, really wanted to get at the ground level. And I figured, you know, what better way to round out my skill set than just go into sales. So I took over international sales for this company. I expanded them into Korea, China, you know, some Western European countries, Brazil, and Southeast Asia. And my partner in crime was Brandy, because she was the operations person at the time. So, you know, we like to say normally sales and operations hate each other, right? Because sales is like, sure, we can do that. We'll get it to you next month, and we'll get you X 100,000 units. And then operations is like, whoa, 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 what? We haven't even filed regulatory with the FDA, you know, with FDA in that country. Slow it down. But we got along amazingly, and had such a good time traveling to Shanghai and Hong Kong and Korea, and it was and so we kind of knew we worked really well together, even if we came from two completely different business backgrounds and had such a different kind of point of view, right? She's a lot more conservative. I'm a lot more like growth, let's grow. You know, she's very tactical in her mindset, because she's supply chain operations, right? And I'm more like, you know, let's think big picture and then come down. So I think it's very complementary in a way, but usually when you have two complementary people, quote unquote, you know, they, you know, butt heads at times, and we didn't have any of that. So thought, wow, this is a really good, you know, partner relationship that we should build on. So naturally she was, you know, kind of my first call when I was thinking of going off on my own and starting a business.
Very cool. I actually love that point you make about complementary skill sets, because it's something that I always talk about as well. So my co-founder is my husband, and I feel like we are the exact same way. Like, he's very operational, like into the nitty gritty, very like analytical, and like I'm big picture, like very creative. You know, I come from like, I would say like a marketing background, right? So it's like, it's good complementary skill sets. And I think like it makes for a good business relationship. You're right, when it works.
Absolutely.
So you guys are doing something that I've actually never seen done before in the beauty space, which is crowdsourced beauty brand. What even gave you that idea? Because I do think it's very disruptive.
Oh, thanks. I have to take you back to my being an investor in the early 2000s. Again, the only woman on this investing team at a venture capital firm, trying to get all of these female entrepreneurs in the beauty space funded, really, frankly, failing. If you think about it, only 2% of venture dollars currently goes to female entrepreneurs. And you can imagine how bad it was in 2005 and 2006, right?
It's really like a conversation. Like, things need to change for sure. And like, just as a female founder, like I feel it, I know it. And, you know, it's really, really tragic. And I can't even imagine what it was like back then.
Oh, it's a whole new world. It's a whole new world now, Tiff, which is both encouraging. But you know, I don't think we've come far enough. And I think my primary motivation for Volition was really, I wanted to give female entrepreneurs with these great product ideas an alternative way to get their products in the hands of consumers and retailers without necessarily pitching boardrooms of suits who didn't understand them, didn't understand their brands and how, you know, and didn't use their products, frankly. So, you know, I don't think it was malicious in any way. I don't think it was, you know, that men just don't want to invest in women. I think there is a huge hurdle let's be honest, beauty is super crowded, right? Like there's just so many products. And if you don't understand the nuances of the consumer, they all just start sounding the same. I mean, that's, you know, there's too much just bleed between brands and between products. And so, yeah, as a casual investor, it makes it really hard to pick the winners. And I think what VCs never like to, you know, just to take a flyer, right? I mean, they do take a flyer, but they take a flyer on management teams when they understand the industry. And at the time, there was just not a lot of VCs focusing on the beauty space. And therefore, you know, it was really, really hard to get investment dollars deployed to some of these awesome brands. So I basically set out to, you know, help get some of this stifled innovation to the market. And I became obsessed with it because on the flip side, you know, we invested in, you know, pretty big beauty brands. And I would see the kind of process that the management teams would go through to come up with products. And it was literally like, well, what's Sephora launch? Oh, what did this hot company launch? Oh, it was just so copycat in terms of what, and so disconnected from the customer that, you know, I would see these entrepreneurs like out there selling their own, you know, oil mixtures and clean beauty formulations at fairs and, you know, online or on Etsy or eBay, right? I mean, like, and they were just so different, but yet, you know, there was both from the big company side who couldn't come up with the innovation and then these smaller entrepreneurs who couldn't get the funding to get their products into the marketplace. Like the consumer was basically losing out because they were just seeing the same old stuff. And it was frankly exacerbating the problem that the beauty industry has, which is that everything sounds the same, right? Because the innovation from the smaller entrepreneurs just can't break through. And things have changed now with social media and, you know, et cetera. I mean, I think this is back in the day when, I mean, honestly, I think most people were shopping still at department stores. If you think about how long ago that was, this was pre Whole Foods, you know, Whole Foods being like a big thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was, you know, quite a long time ago. So, you know, the companies that controlled the channels to market, the communication to the customer, you know, they did it through huge department stores, right? There was no Facebook, no Instagram, no, you know, it was really, really hard for indie brands and entrepreneurs to talk to their customers directly. So things have changed now, which is great. But back in the day, if you just kind of imagine what that was like, it was a very different world.
Yeah. So I guess like that was your kind of motive behind Volition. It was kind of to have that gateway, correct?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. To basically take these entrepreneurs who had amazing stories, and then you give them a way to sell their products and pitch directly to the customer, which we do, you know, through our community. You know, we take pre-orders and wait lists and, you know, we do closed forums and so they're able to get the support that they need, to get their products, made through Volition.
So tell me about the whole process behind how this works. Like, basically anyone can submit an idea. Like I want to like walk me through the whole thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, anybody can submit an idea. You get a commission if your product is made by us. So we definitely share in the success and we've had numerous innovators. That's what we call the women and hopefully men soon, behind our products. You know, we've had many of them, you know, cry when, you know, when we first launch their products and they first get their commission checks. One of our very first innovators, you know, sent us this note that I still have on my desk, which says she was finally able to afford a down payment on her house for the first time. So those are all those entrepreneurial stories that we love. But at the core, you submit an idea. If your idea wins, passes the different stage gates that we've built. So a wait list, a pre-order, you know, and then if that launches, then it gets sold on volitionbeauty.com as well as our partner retailers. And you just make money while you sleep, as I like to say.
That's really cool. So then how specific or broad does an idea have to be? Like, do I come to you guys and I'm like, I researched this awesome ingredient and I think, you know, it'll make for an awesome face mask or a serum? Or is it just, I hear that vitamin D has new skincare benefits. Like, can that be developed into a product? Like, how does the process work?
Yeah, sure. It's run the gamut, to be honest, right? Because our innovators aren't just beauty consumers. Some of them are, for example, product developers or chemists themselves, and they've come to us with pretty baked formulas that they've actually experimented with, like, you know, in their labs. But I would say for the non-beauty insider, right? Mm-hmm. So that, you know, just the person without a background in beauty, you know, they've submitted just ingredient ideas to us, right? Like, one of our best-selling products is our snow mushroom water serum. Mm-hmm. And this came from Katie. You know, she has no background in the beauty space. And, you know, she had just been doing research about recipes to help her with her own skin problems. And she stumbled across the snow mushroom, the tremella mushroom, which is a popular Taiwanese recipe for, you know, for a soup that helps with your skin. And so her submission was, you know, just that, just, you know, these are my skin problems. This is my story. I found this snow mushroom ingredient and I would love to share it with your community. So it was that simple. And then it is really Volition's value add to help elevate, like, do research on that ingredient, work with our labs to, you know, to come up with a final formulation and make sure that the claims that we're making on that ingredient are correct and proven. And,
That's really cool. And then do you highlight the innovators who've come up with that idea?
Absolutely. It's their stories that we like to tell. That's our content, right? So on the box, they actually have, they're highlighted not only on the copy on the box and in videos on our websites, but, you know, we have what we call an innovator card that comes with every product and it shows, you know, tells her story. You know, on our Sephora pages, they're usually featured in the videos that are on those, telling their stories. We like to talk about them on social as much as we can, with the press as much as we can. You know, we were in a New York Times article, and the whole article was really just about our innovators and their stories. And that's really important to us as a company. You know, we're not a single founder brand. We're mm-hmm. a multiple founder platform. And that really comes from, you know, my background as a VC. Like, when I would see founders, I would be like, oh my God, like that passion, that drive, that determination, that, like, need to not fail was something that I just would, like, I wanted to bottle it. It's mm-hmm. just so, but powerful and inspiring. And so, you know, for every product that we have, you know, we have a founder behind that product. So
I love that. Yeah, I think it's really, really cool. So then tell me, Patricia, like, before you, like, you have this idea, but before your brand is launched, you don't really have a community to lean on to, like, send you these ideas. So what's the starting point like?
Yeah. So the starting point was really, so we knew that we didn't know what people were going to submit to us. That's the one thing we knew.
Yeah.
So naturally, our first order of business was to be able to make whatever this question mark thing is that people are going to submit to us. So we basically had to go out and round up, you know, not only talented product developers and chemists and labs, but we had to do it in a way that we basically could make anything and make anything in record time, because we knew that we would be going through this whole like voting process. And as we built our community, you know, we'd have to be open about what it was that we were launching, which is very, very unlike any other company.
Because it's totally different.
Yeah. So we knew we had to do it. We had to be able to make anything. We had to make it available in record time. So Brandy and I went out like pitch deck in hand. And our first order of business was getting the labs on board, and not just one or two labs. Like we had to get 25, right? Because they needed to do hair care, body care, SPF, like anything, right? So we had to make sure that we had those, that network, that infrastructure in place once the ideas started coming in. And then actually that whole exercise led to our first few submissions, because we would go to the labs and the chemists and we'd be like, hey, here's our concept. Would you be open to helping us develop these, you know, these products as they come in? And some of the chemists would be like, oh, well, yes, I would love to do that. That's really cool. But also, you know, I've been working on this formula, haven't given it to any of our other clients. And would you like to learn more about it? It's sort of my passion project. You know, one of our very first products was our silk gelée mask. And it came from this Japanese chemist, Takako. And we were pitching her because we knew she had just an amazing, amazing artistry. And she, lots of her formulations were on the shelf in Asia and et cetera. And she was, she was just an artist. And she said to us, yeah, I have a ton of products that like brands have, you know, hasn't been a fit. Like one of them is this silk gelée mask, and everybody is like into paper masks right now. And so they don't want to do, you know, they don't want to commercialize what is basically just a better version of a mud mask. You know, they're like, well, mud masks are so 5 years ago. So it wasn't necessarily like on trend, but she's like, but this formula is amazing, right? Like I use it, you know, she's like, I've perfected it for myself because I love it so much. And she had taken this, like she had found this like Nordic silt, that she had put into this gel suspension. So it was a really, really unique in terms of its actual, texture. And, yeah, she gave it to us. It was our first product we launched with. And we sold like hundreds and thousands of them on Facebook in the beginning. So it was
wow.
Yeah. And it's just because, you know, I feel like it goes back to that idea that, you know, these bigger companies, like they're not trying to take a risk, right? Like they're just kind of trying to ride a trend. And so you need that outsider perspective kind of to bring a new product to the marketplace.
I think it's so smart. And again, like that's kind of what allows for new things, because a lot of the times, like I will notice that there's a trend of a certain thing kind of happening. And there's like a lot of kind of similar products. Like at one point it was vitamin C, like everyone was releasing a vitamin C serum. Right. And like you notice these things, whereas like silk gelée, like what the hell even is that? Like, I've never heard of that. That's really cool.
Yeah. You've got to kind of keep on the sort of bleeding edge of things, I think, in a way. And that's why we have our community, right? Because we knew we're not just a company that's about like, oh, here's this, you know, super, super new, different, first to market ingredient, because you'll fail all day if you, you'll have a bunch of failed products if you're just always taking that risk. So that's why we then set out to complement that innovation and that entrepreneurial challenge with a community that would then help us figure out, okay, like this is actually something that has legs. You know, this is going to be, you know, big enough for Volition to pursue. So then we use that as a secondary screen. And then of course we've invested, you know, millions of dollars and years of development into our proprietary software technology platform that basically allows us to ingest all of these ideas from our community and then only pick the best ones.
Really cool. So then tell me your tips on building community, because that's kind of like the basis of Volition, I feel like.
Yeah. Tips on building community. So I think it depends on the platform, of course. But I think, this might sound so basic, but I think one, don't underestimate the intelligence of your community, right? Like I think a lot of times, especially on platforms like Instagram, you know, it's really easy to think like, oh, she just wants pretty pictures, or she just wants this certain filter on, you know, et cetera. You know, she's only following X, Y, and Z celebrity, and then not putting the effort in to really talk to her about her products and about her, what she needs, right? So we make sure that we never underestimate our community, because they are actually the source of all of our innovation. And then I think secondly, at the core of what we do is really the belief that the people suffering from a problem are the best ones to help solve it. So, you know, when, like, we know that skincare is like fun. It's not as fun as makeup, but like skincare is a little bit more serious. And sometimes people who are looking to switch or looking to make an investment in skincare, you know, they're suffering from, you know, some pretty big acne or hyperpigmentation or rosacea. Like there's some sort of serious problems that we want to help solve. So just having that care and really caring about, you know, how we help her and what we say, and just, you know, kind of being there, I think it makes a huge difference to how bigger brands talk to their community. And so so for smaller startups, I think it's really important to have that perspective.
Yeah, and like I think that what you're saying is so spot on, because as a startup, and I think, like, of course, this can kind of bleed into your ethos even as you scale, to have that line of communication, like really understand what your customer needs, what's making them happy, what's not, is like, it's so important. It's actually like quite precious. Like even for us, it's shaped a lot of actually everything that we've done. And even just as we're looking into future product formulations, like, you know, constantly doing focus groups with our existing customers, talking to them, figuring out like, what's going on with you? You know, like what does the space not cover for you? It's really interesting. It's like a superpower.
Absolutely. That's a really good way to put it. I love that. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I think back to, you know, what we learn from our customers, and, you know, not only do they give us their product ideas, right, but they're for the most part just talking to us about these skincare concerns that other brands and products haven't been able to solve for them, right? Yeah. And they're giving us that privilege to help them solve it, right? And the privilege to help them come up with a formula that is, you know, life-changing for them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for us, we look at it as exactly that, as a privilege to help them, you know, get their product to market, you know, and I think it's just precious.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So what are some of the scrappy things you did when you were starting out? Like lessons in brand building, going above and beyond for your customers? Like obviously you guys have a great relationship with your community. Like what are those things that other entrepreneurs can learn from you guys?
Scrappy, what did we do? And what did we do that was not scrappy? I feel like, this is an aside, but I still vacuum our office, pre-COVID, but I'm still the like office vacuumer, and it's become this thing where I just do like my suite now, because it's alienated some of our other employees, because I do it more to like just reset, like so I'll have like a big meeting, and it just like allows me to like like be calm. I'm a mom of two, and so of course I just like love, like I have to clean up after them, and just it helps me sort of just like clear my space and my mind. So people get nervous when I vacuum because they think like, oh my god, she's stressed out, like something's wrong. But I still do it because I love it. So there you go. I still vacuum the office, but now just my part of the office. But yeah,
that's really funny. And then any like stories you have with like customers speaking directly to them, maybe learning something that like others can kind of take from you as well.
Yeah. So one of the things we did, I think this was maybe the first or second, the first year that we launched, was Brandy and I hand wrote Christmas cards to our top customers, and not just like thanks for helping support the brand, like actually looked at what they bought, looked at what they came back to buy, and wrote them like very, very customized cards to just thank them for their support, and mailed it to them. And we each wrote about 250 each, and I would say that those customers like have been with us to this day, right? I think that kind of touch point, was just so, was so meaningful to them at the time that, it was a really, really successful, our most successful like marketing campaign at the time. And like Brandy and I would be writing the cards, like we'd be eating lunch and writing cards, we'd be in like internal meetings and be writing the cards, and just like we just took so much time to and effort to actually handwrite these things that it made a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do. Like we did custom Polaroids for all of our customers we're still doing it really, but now, you know, we have a little bit of help, but Nish and I, like my co-founder and I, like we did all of that ourselves for a very long time. At the beginning, we were doing handwritten, like long form notes. So this is like, I mean, it's a lot of work, but I feel like it allows your customers to feel so connected to you and vice versa as well. Like I think that those little moments of personalization go such a long way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, I think particularly in the beauty space, right, like that is dominated by big brands and big companies, as a startup brand trying to break through, it becomes very important that you do all the things that the bigger brands would never do.
Yeah, we have this thing within like our internal team. It's always like do things that don't scale, because you have such a unique advantage. Yeah, because like you can do all these things when you're like littler, and we've done them all. And I feel like that's kind of what allows you to keep those relationships with your community and build that. So I think that Christmas card idea is just like, it's incredible. Like, I love that you guys did that. And I'm sure that, I mean, that's kind of how you have such a strong community. Like, why would they leave after that?
Absolutely.
So you are a former VC. When you guys were going out and building Volition, did you go and raise money right away?
We raised a seed round from friends and family, mostly my business school friends and venture guys.
So what advice do you have for entrepreneurs who are going to raise money, especially female entrepreneurs? Because, I mean, like we've talked about this, it's a whole thing and there's just not enough.
Yeah. I think it's a complicated question, and it's one I get all the time. And I want to be a little bit more thoughtful than what I usually say, which is like, know your numbers and be prepared to, you know, answer a lot of financial questions, which is yes, absolutely true. Right. Like when a VC is looking at a company in a space that he doesn't know very well, they'll immediately go to things that are universal, which is data. So they're gonna go, let's say he doesn't know anything about wellness, and ingestibles and wellness. He's just gonna go directly to like, okay, what's your growth on Instagram? What's your repeat purchase rate? What's your cohort? What do your early cohorts look like? They're gonna try and basically baseline your business and your brand into something where they're like, okay, well, I don't know ingestibles in wellness, but I looked at this one protein powder company back then. And so how does this startup compare to that, right? They're going to try and baseline you into this kind of analytical data dump so that they can see whether or not your business has legs. So of course, absolutely know all of the data, know what they're going to baseline you to and just throw it at them without looking at your slides so that then you check the box and they think, okay, that founder is totally on top of that. So that's good. She's watching the same things that we would watch. And so, we can get behind that kind of thing. But, I was thinking too about how I'd be more thoughtful in terms of my advice to early entrepreneurs. And I would say, I think it's important to put yourself in the shoes of that investor, not only when you're pitching them, but I think when they're saying no, right? And I would say a thing that most people don't understand is that, that investor who you're talking to might be saying no, not because of your brand or your background or what school you went to or any of those sort of personal things that, we as founders, tend to take to heart. They may know, for example, that their investment committee just looked at this space and said no to another company, very, very similar, in terms of size or, founder story or whatever, and that they can't run you up the flagpole at this point, right? Mm-hmm. They might know that their boss, if they're an associate or a VP or a partner with a little p, they might know that their partner with a big P, right, doesn't necessarily like brands that, don't have a chief marketing officer like right off the bat. Something as like nuanced as that, right? Because all the investors that you're talking to all have a job to do, right? And their job is to deploy capital. And they want to deploy as much capital as possible in order to basically get promoted within their firm. So and they very rarely, like I said, if they don't know the space, they're not trying to like judge you based on all these like different things. They're just trying to look at how you and your company and your story fit as a puzzle piece into this sort of jigsaw that is like their boss, their investment committee, other companies in their portfolio, how much money you're raising versus how much their average check size is, right? And they're just doing that math and that calculation kind of behind the scenes. So I think that's basically what I'm trying to say is that a no is very rarely personal or it's not about your brand, right? Mm-hmm. Or it's not about your product. It's about all the other things that are going on within that that investor's fund or that investor's current portfolio.
I really love that answer. For anyone who's going out to raise money or like in that stage where they're pitching, do you have any resources that you recommend, like any books or articles that you've really loved?
On the pitching part, I think it's a numbers game. So I don't necessarily think you'll find your answers in books. I think you'll find you just got to go out there and you just got to talk to as many people as possible and know that 90% of them, 95% of them are going to say no. So I wouldn't even waste your time reading a book when it came to just go out there and just start pitching, just start practicing, just talk to as many people as possible and ask for as many introductions as possible. I would say on the negotiation part of it, understanding the terms of your first seed investment or your Series A, I would go straight to so the NVCA has this guide. It's a very, very simple guide to term sheets and or convertible notes for or safes. And I think it's really important that a founder knows what they're signing up for in terms of vesting, in terms of liquidation preference, in terms of how that investment is structured in participation and interest rate and all of that. I think it's really important that that you learn up and, you know, or you read up on it before you go into negotiations with an investor. And it's not something that just paying up for a lawyer will solve for you, because a lot of those terms are very personal in terms mm-hmm. of what you can, you know, how long you want to be doing this, how risk averse you are as an entrepreneur. And so I would say you have to have a working knowledge of that when you go into negotiations.
Such a good tip, because I have heard really bad horror stories as well about like founders who maybe weren't familiar or like didn't really understand the terms they were saying yes to, and then they kind of got screwed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I mean, just know one of the basic things is like, you know, a lot of term sheets these days, like the hot thing is to give a really high valuation, but to put a really high liquidation preference on it. So that means that they get a certain multiple mm-hmm. of their money out before you get paid, before you as a common yeah. shareholder get paid. So, you know, sometimes, and I haven't seen term sheets like this, to be honest, since like 2000. Right. When it was like the bubble of, you know, the internet bubble. But there was like 4 or 5 times liquidation preferences sometimes. Ooh. Where they would, the investors, if they gave you $1 million, they would get $5 million out of that company before you got paid a penny, which makes no sense if you yeah. think about who's putting the effort, you know, into building that brand. So, it's a bit crazy.
Yeah, actually, like that was exactly the term that kind of screwed someone over that I'd heard of. And like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is just something that everyone needs to kind of know about and just know what goes into those kind of documents and all of that.
And very, just a general understanding. So, mm-hmm. you know, just looking at this like quick guide might be a good place to start.
Totally. So I want to talk about your partnership with NBCU, because I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, it's quite unique. I think we're actually maybe the only indie beauty brand that that has it. So it's a marketing partnership. It's a multi-year partnership where we basically co-create products with their rosters of talent. So, And it's quite unique to something Volition can do, because Volition is the only brand with actual, you know, innovators behind each of our products, right? So the idea being that, you know, NBCU owns all of these networks, everything from E to USA to Bravo. They own all of these franchises of shows, everything from Keeping Up the Kardashians, which probably everybody knows, to The Real Housewives, to whatever, right? I mean, there's a bunch of content there. And they've created amazing brands on those shows, right? Kylie is one of them. Skinny Girl, right? Bethany Frankel did it. You know, I think that their platform is second to none. So, you know, for us, I think partnering with their teams across their different networks, and then having their talent be the innovators behind some of our products, is really going to help us, I think, you know, not only talk about the brand on a bigger platform, but come out with some really, really interesting innovations, and then take audiences behind the scenes so they can see what it's like to work with Volition and what it's like to be a Volition innovator. So a lot of those shows, you know, you'll see my face on Zoom, you know, because we shot them a lot in COVID, you know, talking about the problems that these NBCU innovators are trying to solve, and then helping them solve them.
That is so freaking cool. Like, I can't get over it. Who have you partnered with that our audience might have heard of?
Yeah. So the first one that launched just in November of last year, her name is Maurice Mezzanine, and she's on a USA show called The Miz and Mrs. And it's a comedy show, actually. It's their ex-WWE. Well, she's an ex-WWE superstar, and he's currently a big, big WWE personality. Mm-hmm. And this show basically takes audiences, you know, into their lives. And her story is basically that, you know, she had retired from professional wrestling. She had 2 kids on the show that, you know, she became a mom, and she was looking to basically improve her beauty routine, make it cleaner, make it better. So we partner with her to come out with a moisturizer that's packed with caffeine, because I like to say she wanted it to pack a punch, is what she always says. So she needed something. She's super busy, a new mom, plus the show, you know, plus all of her other obligations. So, you know, coffee and tea, Yopon tea is what she, was her moisturizer. It's what she drinks in the morning to get herself revived. And it was a very special ingredient for her. It's the only actually caffeinated plant that's endemic to the United States. So, you know, she and her husband had lived in Texas and found this tea. And so we put it in a clean caffeine moisturizer that the show kind of talks about and shows her partnership with us and everything.
That is super cool. Wow. Like I mean, what a great story. So if, you know, other brands are in your shoes and, like, I mean, you guys have done such a phenomenal job, how do you go about kind of finding these great partners?
Like NBCU or like Maurice?
Yeah. Like NBCU, for example, or like, obviously not something at that kind of level, but like, say it's a new brand and they want to kind of partner with like another great brand as well. Like, how do you go about doing something like that?
So I would say a lot of our, I would classify these as sort of like business development.
Yeah, of course.
Relationships. You know, I would say that the circle of founders and entrepreneurs, I think just as you're, you know, doing panels or you do, we have, for example, a circle of entrepreneurs from, you know, a working line of capital bank that we use, and they put all their entrepreneurs from all these different industries together. And there's like a Google group or forum that we all kind of chit chat on. And you'll find a lot of folks at Klaviyo does it as an email marketing platform. They'll just put these like startups together. And so that's a really cool, I think, source of just connections. Also going to like venture conferences or going to like marketing conferences, you just connect with other entrepreneurs and other companies that, you know, are interested in what you're doing. So yeah, that's really where a lot of these partnerships have come from.
Yeah, I think it's a great tip. And I feel like, you know, again, I think it's a different kind of community. And I think at the end of the day, community is everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just always be talking about your brand. If you're always talking about your brand, hopefully somebody will listen and kind of think like, oh, we should do X, Y, and Z together.
It's true. Okay, Patricia, this was awesome. Tell everyone where they can find you.
Absolutely. So we're at Volition Beauty on Instagram. We're volitionbeauty.com. For our website, you can both shop and submit ideas on that site. We have a portion of the site that's called the lab, where we take idea submissions, and you can also vote and pre-order some of the currently trending campaigns.
It's very cool, by the way, guys. Like I've seen that portion of the website. I've never seen anything like it. It is really, really sick what you guys have done.
Oh, thank you. Thank you,
Sarah. Thank you for being here, Patricia. This was awesome.
Absolutely. It was so great to chat.